It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Welcome to the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher, and let me tell you, we are almost to college football, and that's what this show is about today. All college football, unless you give me a call and tell me something different that you want to talk about, and you can do that. Give me a call, 522-9872. That's 522-9872 or 522-XTRA. That's it. It's that easy to be on the show. But let me tell you what we got going on the show today. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking with Coach Mike McIntyre of the University of Colorado Buffaloes. Five different organizations named him the National Coach of the Year. He was also Pac-12 Coach of the Year. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about where he came from and how he got to where he's at now. Who were the influences in his life? I'd like to go a little deeper rather than, hey, you had a great year last year. So we're going to find out about the man that Mike McIntyre is. After that, we're going to take a trip to Hoover, Alabama for the SEC Media Days. Crazy days there. They're Monday through Thursday this past week in Hoover, Alabama, right outside of Birmingham. And it was a good show there. And we'll hear all about it from our friend Josh Ward from Knoxville with WNML. And then after that, we're going to be talking with Danny Noakes. Danny Noakes is with Super Sports 101.7 in Blacksburg, Virginia. He spent all week at ACC Media Days. That's right. It's Media Day time. Next week, we'll be in the Big 12 talking about the Big 12 Media Days, and we're going to be in the Mountain West. We'll have Pac-12 people. We will have everybody you need to hear from to get yourself amped up and ready for college football season. But we're going to start off this week how we ended last week, and that's with a Heisman flashback.
It's time for a history lesson with the professor. Here's a Heisman flashback.
The winner is Lamar Jackson of University of Louisville.
Jackson, look out! Makes a cut. Why not spin in for another touchdown? Unbelievable. He has seized this national stage and made a strong early Heisman statement.
You know how everybody has a kind of a Heisman play that you see the highlights over and over and over again?
They sense it, I think, right there. Yeah. Look at that.
What an exclamation point for him today. And against the Noles defense, this isn't Syracuse, that's Florida State's defense. He just walked right through.
47-yard scamper for the quarterback. He's now run for four, thrown for one. Another monster total offense game. Five straight 100-yard rushing games. Jackson spinning and twisting to six more.
To the Heisman voters, I'm truly honored and humbled to be a 2016 Heisman Trophy winner. To be able to stand up here like all the other former Heisman Trophy winners, I'm extremely proud to represent this class and the University of Louisville with their first Heisman Trophy. I'd like to extend my appreciation to the Heisman Trust and all the people. This tremendous award for making this an experience of a lifetime, and I'll remember for the rest of my life. For my teammates, this award for all of us. Can't wait to cherish this moment with all of you. I love you guys. But to be included, I love Didi, man. I love Bake. I just met these guys, but I love them, man. Deshaun and Jabril. You know, it's been a fun experience up here in New York with these guys. And my first time meeting them, man, they treated me just like family. So I love them guys. Oh, growing up in Florida, there were so many influential people in my life who made me the player and the man I am today. to shut this award forever. Ooh, it's crazy.
After Lamar Jackson tore up Florida State, which he was doing through everybody in the ACC, he went on to have one of the greatest years in college football history. He threw for 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, only 9 interceptions, but that's not it. He ran for 1,500 yards. Also, 21 touchdowns. 51 touchdowns that this young man was a part of at Louisville last year for the Cardinals. Only a sophomore. So, if you think about it, he could win 3 Heisman trophies. Will he win 2? I don't think so. There's only been one person that has won 2 Heisman trophies. I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to do it. Too much other people out there this year with Baker Mayfield returning as well. And you have all the others that are going to be in the running for the Heisman Trophy. But congratulations to Lamar Jackson. Great season last year. Let's see what you can follow up that with this year for the Louisville Cardinals and the ACC. And like I said, we'll be talking some ACC football here in just a little bit with Danny Noakes from Blacksburg, Virginia, from ACC Media Days. But we got a caller. Dave, you're on line one. What you got?
Yeah, I was just wondering where you think the Big 12 is going to be in a year, 2 years down the road. You think they're going to expand, disband, stay at 10 teams?
Where do I think the Big 12 is going to be? Well, that's a tough, tough question, Dave. That's a great question. They need to expand. They have to expand, but they have to do it the right way. You can't be going and pick up you got to stay away from city universities. Stay away from the Cincinnati. Stay away from the Memphis, the Houstons. You need state universities. You need state backings because, yeah, a Houston's great, but it really pulls people only in from the Houston area. Granted, Houston is a recruiting hotbed with all this high school football they got going on there. Memphis, you know, not a big reach. Cincinnati, not a big reach. BYU, that would be a good fit. It's a national reach. Boise State, yes, it does have the name of a city in the title, but I still think that Boise State would be a better fit than a Houston or a Memphis or a Cincinnati. But then you've got to figure out travel with that as well. So, you know, that's where I'd almost want to think. And I think for football, maybe in any other sport, I don't think Colorado State or Air Force would be competitive. But the thing is, the stadium size here at Falcon Field is so small. I've seen Texas high school stadiums that are twice the size of Falcon Field. And so you're bringing in Division I teams to play here. You'd almost have to say, hey, Air Force, you got to give up a home game when an Oklahoma or a Texas comes in because the fans are going to want to be there. You'll have more fans travel from Oklahoma and Texas than you do have come from Air Force. And so they're going to go, hey, why don't we do something up at Mile High? And that pulls away from the on-campus experience. Which it is what it is out at the Air Force, and they need to grow, but I don't think anything's going to happen right now. I'd like to see it happen because nothing happens before the new round of TV contracts comes up, the Big 12 will get swallowed up and you'll end up having 4 super conferences, the ACC, the SEC, the Big 10, and the Pac-12. The Big 10 will have 16, there will be 4 16 teams and leagues, and who knows where Oklahoma and Texas go, but I guarantee if either one of them jump ship, everybody else in the Big 12 will be jumping ship and the Big 12 will no longer be a conference. Dave, I hope I answered your call. I answered your question. Looks like we dropped you. But coming up after the break, we're going to take more of your calls later in the show. But right after, Coach Mike McIntyre of the Colorado Buffaloes, he's going to be jumping in the classroom and talking with the professor right here on Extra Sports 1300. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
This is Dusty DeVorsek, former Oklahoma Sooner and Chicago Bear. sports talk radio show on WWL's Sports Animal in Oklahoma City and a college football analyst for ESPN. And you're listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. We are joined now by the head coach of the CU Buffs. That's right, Coach Mike McIntyre. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Glad to have you on. Now, of course, we could start off talking about the success of last year, but I want to go back a little further in history and talk about when you played football, when you were back when you were at Brentwood Academy, who is one of the strongest teams in the state of Tennessee. You went to a great school especially for football, because there's a list of NFL players that went to Brentwood. Talk about your time at Brentwood and the success that team has continued to have.
Wow. I think we had leather helmets back when I played.
I think so.
It's a phenomenal school. It helped shape me a tremendous amount. It's a special place. It still is. It's based on the triangle principle with spiritual at the bottom, athletic and academic. Still to this day, they have no locks or doors on their lockers. They don't even have a janitor. Everybody cleans up. Special, special, special place. And it taught me so much. And I'm so humbled that I was able to go there. Football-wise, my head coach, Carlton Flatt, he's the winningest football coach in the history of the state of Tennessee football. I still bring him back once a year to a game. And we're still really close. And I would not be where I am today if I wouldn't have gone to Brentwood Academy. And I believe that with all my heart and soul.
And then you went on to play some college ball. You went to started off at Vanderbilt, and you had a special thing there because you come from a football family, because your dad was your coach at Vanderbilt. Talk about your time working with your dad as your coach.
Yeah, that was a special time. I'd always wanted to play for my dad and had opportunities to go other places and decided to go there. And at a high school, I was a quarterback. I knew if I went to play for my dad, I couldn't play quarterback. So I was only 5'10", so I went there and played safety and returned punts and kicks and enjoyed my time. Unfortunately, my dad had won Coach of the Year a couple years earlier. We didn't win enough games, and they let him go. That's the way our business is, but I really enjoyed that. And then I was able to go play at Georgia Tech for Bill Curry and Bobby Ross. It's interesting. All three head coaches I played for were all National Coaches of the Year. That was a special part. I believe in me. I learned so much from those three men, and really instilled a lot in me.
You've either played or coached with Hall of Fame coaches, whether they're in the NCAA or the NFL, because you spent some time in the NFL with the Cowboys and the Jets under Bill Parcells. I mean, and you don't get much bigger of a name than Bill Parcells when you're talking football coaching. But I want to talk about one of your players that you had when you were there with the Cowboys. You had one of the best, I think, one of the best strong safeties in the history of the game, whether it be college or pro, and that being Roy Williams. Talk about your time there at Dallas.
You know, Roy was phenomenal to coach. All 4 years that I was there and coached him, it was really a lot of fun. He was a Pro Bowl player all 4 years. He had an exceptional attitude, great charisma. We used to call him, he was kind of like a stingray. He would strike you. When he was young in his years, he would get you and strike from anywhere. He literally struck fear in the NFL players. But his smile and his charisma and his work ethic was really, really special. And it was a joy to coach Roy.
But that wasn't the first time you had seen Roy Williams, because back in 1999, when you were an assistant at Ole Miss, you coached against him in the Independence Bowl. Enough about Roy. A coach on the other sidelines that retired just a few weeks ago, Bob Stoops. Can you talk about what you think? I know you've met Bob Stoops and probably been, at coaches' clinics and everything. What was your impressions of Stoops, and what do you think his lasting legacy will be on the game?
Bob Stoops was a great person in our game. He was also a great family man. He had his priorities straight, and he was very, very successful. And that's what I think he taught a lot of us young coaches. And I was very impressed with his longevity at Oklahoma. You know, that's a place that's really, really, there's a lot of high standards there. And he was able to do it for a long time and do it well. The game's going to miss him, and I wish him the very best.
Now, through all your different coaching stops, you did get to coach the same place your father did when you were at Tennessee Martin. But we're going to fast forward a little bit to San Jose State. You took over.
Right.
You took over a team that went 1-12, and you, in a couple years, got them to 10-2, their first ranking in forever. And talk about the turnaround you had there at San Jose State.
It was a bunch of young men and coaches that bought into what we wanted to do, and they were extremely hungry. We, you know, we had a lot of good football players that we were able to recruit and bring there, and it was just an exceptional time to watch them mature and perform like they did, and reach goals that nobody thought they'd reach. We won the bowl game. I wasn't there for the bowl game, but that 11th win had them as the winningest team in the history of the school. So it was a special group of young men, because they went from the team that lost the most games in the history of the school and then 2 years later won the most games in the history of the school with the same guys. And I think that just showed work ethic and character and, you know, believing in yourselves and believing in each other. It was a great experience.
Now, that was a great turnaround at a lower level, but then you had to do pretty much the same thing coming into a Colorado program that had been down for many years. I don't think that they hadn't been to a bowl game since 2006. And then you came in from a 1-11 team, and then you can fast forward to last year where five different organizations named you the National Coach of the Year, also the Pac-12 Coach of the Year. Talk about what last year's team has, I mean, what did for the program. First ever Pac-12 South title in the school's
right.
history. I mean, yeah, there are some Big 8 and Big 12 titles back in the history of the school, but now, you know, we're present tense in the Pac-12. Talk about that.
Again, it was just a great, great job by the coaching staff and our players, and then the whole school buying into wanting to be successful again. And, you know, it's had great history. And for us to really rise from the ashes, nobody gave us a thought, a chance. And it was, again, it was those same type of young men that kept working hard, kept believing. And they had that great fortitude. It was a magical year. And, you know, it didn't end like we wanted it to, but that gave these young men that are here now inspiration to finish it off like we should. So I was it was an exceptional year. And, again, it really just goes back to people believing in each other and not listening to anybody on the outside. And when you do that, you can accomplish great things, not only in sports, but in business and in your families and everything you do, because there's always going to be people that want to take a negative approach. And if you keep the positive side of it and keep believing in each other, you can accomplish things together that nobody believes you can. And really, a lot of times, something you might not even believe you can at first. And that's what I saw. I saw a bunch of young men make themselves believe they could accomplish something.
Okay. Now, when you left San Jose State, you just had the big turnaround. You've had a big, but you didn't get to be able, you weren't able to follow that up. This year, you get to follow up the big turnaround. How do you see this team's, through spring practice and everything you've done during the summer, how do you see this team shaping up coming into the season?
Yes, you know, we should be a good football team. I definitely believe we will be a good football team. I'm excited about all of our players, you know, what we're doing. We've been in the same system now for a while, so there's a lot of carryover. There's a lot of young guys that have played quite a bit of football for us that will play well for us this year, and I'm excited about where we're headed.
And it is an exciting time at CU. It really is. But I want to talk about the state of Colorado as a whole, because everybody loves it when you have that hometown kid on the team. What is recruiting the state of Colorado? How is that helping your team, and how do you think the strength of the state of Colorado is?
We signed five young men out of Colorado this past year. That's the most they've signed here, I think, in over 10 years. The state is growing. You know, population is what drives recruiting, really. And as our state grows, and there's a lot of great football coaches in this league, there's a lot of really good football players, but as our population keeps growing, that's going to give you another kid every year, so to speak, if the next years go by. And we are really recruiting the state of Colorado hard, and would like to have a lot of these young men here. As I recruit the state, though, like I tell everybody, I'm looking for Pac-12 championship football players, not just Division I. And there's a difference there, and that's what we're doing.
Well, you have ties to the South. You were born in Miami, you know, played in the SEC and the ACC. Has that helped in any Southern recruiting?
Yes, it has. It has. We have some connections in the South, and we have a few kids from Florida, a few kids from the Atlanta area on our team. We have a lot of guys from Texas, so that definitely has helped us.
Coach, I know that your time is short. I want to let you go, but I want to thank you for coming on. Hope to be able to talk to you throughout the season every now and then. As you know, the huge games, every game is a huge game in college football because every game is an elimination game since there is no true playoff. You have a four-team playoff. We'll talk about that at another time. But yes. I want to wish you all the best this next season, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Tim. Have a great day.
We're going to take a break here on the University of Fish, but when we come back, we're going to switch from the Pac-12 to SEC Media Days. We'll have someone that was there all week long. When we come back right here on Extra Sports 1300, you're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
This is Mike Roberts with Westward, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. We're going to SEC Media Days. We're going to talk with Josh Ward with WMNL out of Knoxville. That's volunteer country, but we're going to talk about the whole conference. Josh, how you doing this morning?
Hey, doing well. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're with us. Now, you spent all week in Hoover, Alabama. You know, everybody knows, you know, Hoover from the high school, but they also have SEC Media Days there in Hoover. Tell us just a quick overview of the week there at SEC Media Days.
Yeah, it's kind of madness. It's 4 days of each school that broken up into 4 days, brings a head coach and three players. And honestly, a lot of it is the schools trying to figure out who can say the least when they come to Media Days. But they're going through all different kinds of rooms, conference rooms with print media, TV stations, national, local, and there's a radio row, which is where we're set up. And the Alabama Day, the Auburn Day, those are the final 2 days this week. Those are pretty wild because Alabama and Auburn fans load up in the lobby where the event takes place at a hotel in Hoover. And it's pretty wild, but it's a lot of fun. It's the middle of July, and we're talking college football, which is a year-round subject in the southeast of the United States.
Well, I like to think it as a year-round subject everywhere because I know I'm a college football freak myself. But so you got inundated with pretty much Paul Feinbaum this week then, because SEC Media Days, that's got to be like his Christmas.
Yeah, Paul Feinbaum is a big deal, no doubt, with all that he's done. And that's been the case for years now with the SEC Network being a big part of the coverage of this event. That's allowed it to grow and get even more attention. But even with Paul doing radio in Birmingham, it was a big deal. So, yeah, you see a lot of Paul Feinbaum, no doubt. And Tennessee's football coach, Butch Jones, was one of the stories at the beginning of the week. And coverage on the SEC Network was a big part of that because one of the analysts, Booger McFarland, said that he thought Tennessee would be abysmal, said that on radio in Nashville. And then that got attention on TV. And, it's a big deal with the last probably 3-4 years since the SEC Network has allowed more national attention, I think, on the conference. That's created more eyes to pay attention to what's happening this week.
Well, on the Feinbaum subject, I really, really feel for you there. I'm not a big Feinbaum fan myself. But anyway, let's get to what actually happened this week. I want to break it down in East and West, not the 4 days. Now, when you look at the East, no one has been able to overcome the hurdle of beating the West in quite some time. And who do you really think has a chance this year? Is it going to be a Florida? Is Georgia, who's coming out of Media Days, is kind of like the darling of the East? Is it going to be a Tennessee? I don't think Muschamp has much of a chance with South Carolina, but I don't see any other role players. I think the top three players, obviously, are going to be Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. But Tennessee, with Butch Jones, is going to have to make a turnaround, aren't they?
Yeah, no doubt. This is an important season for Butch Jones to at least show he can keep everything where it's been the last couple of years at Tennessee. Last year was the season that the Vols were expected to break through, and halfway through the season it looked like that was happening. Tennessee was 5-0 and had beaten Florida and Georgia. Which team from the East can pull off the upset and beat Alabama, my answer there would be Georgia. I would say that Georgia has the most potential with its roster, with what it has at quarterback. I actually picked Florida to win the East, but in terms of which team could actually break through and topple the West, then I would think that's Georgia. I would think that that would mean that Georgia reaches all of its potential. The reason I picked Florida, by the way, is I think its schedule's more favorable. The rosters are comparable. And the fact that Florida gets LSU and Texas A&M, it's two Western Division opponents both at home. So it plays a much more favorable schedule. That's why I went with the Gators. But in terms of trying to get to the SEC title game and then win it, I would think Georgia gives the East the best chance to do that. But it would be one of those three teams. It would be Florida, Georgia, Tennessee. I just have a hard time believing that it's Tennessee. The Vols right now, according to one sportsbook in Vegas, would be a 24-point underdog at Alabama. That should tell you the difference in the top of the West and some of the top teams in the East.
It really would. Now, looking at the East, okay, Alabama has won the past three in the East, but you take that, you take the one they didn't win away. It's pretty much been the past decade. It's been Alabama or Auburn in the East. I mean, in the West, excuse me. I know I don't want to say this, but is Alabama going to do it again, or can LSU jump up? And A&M possibly, which A&M, I'm never a real believer in them. But even in Arkansas, can anybody topple Alabama in the West?
I would say yes to the answer, can someone do it? I do think Alabama's going to win it. I just think that there's too much talent there. That roster is built to the point that I don't think anybody in the league can compare to it. But I'm not sure how many teams around the country compare to Alabama and what its roster is. Can you beat them on one Saturday? I think Auburn could. Auburn hosts Alabama the last week of the regular season. Could they be in a position where Auburn's able to win that game and that wins the division? We saw it in 2013. Now it was a wild finish with the kick six that Auburn was able to get. That was the first year for Gus Malzahn as the head coach at Auburn, and they pulled off that upset. But again, it was close, and it was almost and it was tied at the time, so they would have gone into overtime, but it was a historic play that won it. So I would still say it's unlikely. LSU could, but Ed Orgeron's there as the head coach, and I still think is largely unproven in what he will be in that role for LSU. And LSU has to go to Tuscaloosa when you look at the head-to-head. So, yes, it could be done. The top team that I would say out of either division that could topple Alabama to win the SEC would be Auburn. But I'll still say that Alabama wins it again.
Now, when you look at quarterback play in the SEC, not a lot of big names coming back. I mean, would that put almost Jalen Hurts as the top returning quarterback in the league? Because he's not really proven as a passer. And when you think coming back as a quarterback, you think of a passer. But, you know, since he's such a dual threat, would he be the top returning one?
Probably so. It would be Hurts or Nick Fitzgerald. I would say Austin Allen at Arkansas is a very solid quarterback, at least. I think he's a good player. There is a lot of anticipation of what that position will look like, though, this year. There are a lot of younger quarterbacks that are growing in the league that have a ton of talent. A lot of second-year players. Shea Patterson at Ole Miss, and he was at Media Days. Jake Bentley, a second-year quarterback at South Carolina, he was down here in Hoover. Jacob Eason at Georgia is a guy with a lot of potential. Tennessee has a second-year quarterback who's trying to win the job. Jared Garantano, who was a four-star player coming out of high school that has a lot of upside. Drew Locke, a rising junior at Missouri, he's going to put up a ton of yards there. Are they going to win a lot of games? I won't say that, but the offense could be pretty fun to watch because of what he could do. So you have a number of quarterbacks, and then Hurts and Fitzgerald, who I mentioned a moment ago, and Austin Allen would be one of the older guys in the league. What can Malik Zaire do at Florida now that he's transferring in from Notre Dame? A lot of anticipation about what that position is going to look like in the SEC, and I think it's going to be the best group of quarterbacks we've seen in several years since you had the group of Manziel, McCarron, Aaron Murray, Zach Mettenberger. The last few years, there hasn't been much at that position, at least not a lot of depth. I think there will be that this year.
Now, when you look at the biggest stories coming out of SEC Media Days, I know one thing that I know Coach Hugh Freeze would wish just go away, because every year when he goes to SEC Media Days, there's some sort of scandal that Mississippi is dealing with. And now the Right Reverend Houston Nutt, with his lawsuit on defamation of character, Can you give me a little insight into that?
Sure. You have Houston Nutt, who has filed a lawsuit against Ole Miss, and the timing is not a coincidence, I don't think. The fact that it comes out the day before Hugh Freeze is here, and Hugh would not comment on it, didn't expect him to, knew that he'd be asked a lot of questions and knew that he wouldn't answer them, but Houston Nutt is saying that Coach Hugh Freeze, as well as Athletic Director Ross Bjork, knowingly gave misinformation and tried to spread it through the media in off-the-record conversations to create the story that most of the violations that were alleged occurred while Houston Nutt was the head coach at Ole Miss. And as the notice of allegations showed, that's not what the allegations are. So Houston Nutt is saying that that the head coach at Ole Miss and the athletic director knowingly tried to spread false information about Houston Nutt. And in a defamation suit, he's going to have to prove as a public figure that they knew that they were giving out false information. That's what he's attempting to do by showing that it was done through the media. We'll see how it plays out. I think it's actually a fascinating story. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know that you have to, and I'm not going to pretend to be a legal expert, but I know that you have to show that there was actual malice and that they were trying to knowingly spread false information. And Houston Nutt says that he has proof that that occurred.
Now, I've known Houston Nutt since like the mid-80s when he was actually recruiting me out of high school and he's a wide receiver coach at Oklahoma State. And I find the man very trustworthy. He's a very honest man in my dealings with him. So I don't think that Houston would just be throwing frivolous lawsuits around. So like you said, it will be very interesting to see how this plays out. Now, Sumlin, Malzahn, anybody else that may not be showing up to SEC Media Days next year, let's talk about coaches on the hot seat this year, that coaches that have to perform. And God, I hate to say it for you because I know it's a local team for you. You got to put Butch Jones in there too.
Yeah, there are questions around those coaches you mentioned. I would say Kevin Sumlin faces the most pressure based on what his athletic director said recently about this year. Kevin Sumlin needs to win, and he's won the last few years, 3 straight years going 8-5, but at $5 million a year, Texas A&M expects more from Kevin Sumlin. So I would say he faces the most pressure. You know, Gus Malzahn is interesting because he might have the second-best team in the division, second or third. He's right in there with LSU behind Alabama. We just talked about them possibly winning the division. But there's also the what if they don't. And last year they went to the Sugar Bowl, but they went to the Sugar Bowl and went 8-5. So I'm sure there's always pressure at Auburn. It's a school that fired Gene Chizik not too long after he won a national title. And then at Tennessee with Butch Jones, I don't think there's as much heat under that seat as we hear some nationally say, but it is an important year, no doubt. And if Tennessee finishes 7-5 or worse, depending on how that scenario plays out, Tennessee with a new athletic director could have a decision to make. But you know, all 7-5s, all 8-4s are not created equally. 6-6 or worse would be a big problem, but I would say that there's been too much pressure applied to Butch Jones' position right now, but that first month is important. Tennessee plays against Georgia Tech in Atlanta in the season opener on Labor Day, then goes to Florida in week 3 and hosts Georgia in week 5. So 5 weeks in, get back to me, and I'll tell you where things stand with Tennessee and Butch Jones.
All right, now, last question. Surprise team in the SEC this year. I'm not going to say surprise and win the conference because that's going to be for any of the teams I'm going to mention, will be just out of reach. But Arkansas, Vandy, and South Carolina, which of those three teams – oh, let's throw Kentucky in there with Mark Stoops because they had a rebound year last year as well. Which of those four teams do you see having the most success this year?
Kentucky. I will go Kentucky ahead of South Carolina with that question. You know, Kentucky went 4-4 in the league last year and had a win against Louisville. Off to a disappointing start, lost to Southern Miss, and I thought that Kentucky was going to have major problems. But they've got some pretty good players coming back, and it looks like maybe they're settling on Johnson at quarterback, and he could be the guy. He said that he was told he's the guy, and that there won't be a quarterback competition with Drew Barker, who was the starter at the beginning of last season, got hurt, and then Johnson came in and helped Kentucky get to a 7-5 finish with the regular season. So I think we'll find out pretty early if Kentucky has improved from where it was a year ago. In the first month, Kentucky will host Florida and has a long losing streak against the Gators. If Kentucky can somehow pull off that upset, then Kentucky's going to have a big year. It doesn't have to have a nice season, but to get to a mark above 7-5. A lot of people are saying, though, that Kentucky could be ahead of Tennessee, and Kentucky hosts Tennessee the week after the Vols play in Alabama. That's tough anytime you have to play somebody after taking on Alabama, especially if you have to do it on the road the following week. So Kentucky would be the team I'd go with there.
Okay, well, we're talking with Josh Ward. Josh, I know your time is short, and we're getting up against a break here. Want to thank you for coming on this morning. Hope to talk to you throughout the season. Give us a little SEC flavor here on the University of Fish. Thanks for coming on.
Anytime. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
So we got to look at SEC Media Days. When we come back here on the University of Fish, we'll be going to Charlotte, North Carolina for ACC Media Days. That's right. We're going to end up the show with the conference that won the national championship last year, the Atlantic Coast Conference. We'll be joined by Danny Noakes from Charlotte right here on the University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Hi, I'm Billy Sims, a 1978 Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Oklahoma, and you listen to the University of Fish. Boomer!
Welcome back to the University of Fish. You know, we've just looked at SEC Media Days. Now we're going to travel a little further east. Well, it depends on what part of the region of the SEC you're talking about. But we're going to the ACC, just wrapped up Media Days in Charlotte, and we're talking with Danny Noakes of Super Sports 101.7 in Blacksburg, Virginia. Got to be the flagship of the Hokies, I'm guessing, being in Blacksburg. How you doing today, Danny?
I'm doing good, Tim. What's going on, man? How are you?
Not bad. We are getting closer and closer to college football, so everybody's blood is starting to boil. I know I cannot wait for the season to start. I'm compiling my top 25 preseason right now and see how many holes I get to punch into it by the end of December. But let's talk about ACC. Last year, we had three teams that were competitive. I mean, really, Florida State, Clemson, and, of course, Louisville. Louisville did fall off there at the end of the season. But Media Days, we had a possibility talking yesterday that I saw, Thursday, about restructuring the divisions. How would that look like?
You know, Tim, that's a really good question. I know that was something that John Swofford, the ACC commissioner, had kind of talked about. I haven't really looked into it myself. Like, I haven't sat down and, you know, went state by state and kind of region by region through the ACC and see what would work best. But, you know, with the conditions of Louisville and, you know, it seems like Syracuse and stuff like that a couple of years ago, it's made things a little bit different in the league. And, you know, there's been a lot of complaints specifically in Blacksburg and with Virginia Tech that they haven't been able to play teams like Clemson and Florida State and Louisville in a couple of years. You know, they're going to play Clemson this year at the end of September for the first time, I think, since 2013. And they haven't played Florida State since 2012. So the ACC is growing and, you know, just kind of getting the teams in the best position where they're going to put the best games in there, the best matchups, right? That's the most important thing.
Well, and you couldn't really do it geographically. You couldn't do it north and south because the right. South right now would be so much more dominant in both football and basketball. Because you have to think about the basketball part of it as well. And, of course, yes, people are going to say, well, what about baseball? What about all the other sports? Really, we're talking about the two revenue generators that drive everything, and that would be football and basketball, especially basketball in the ACC, where every team seems to be really, really good. But we're talking football right now because that's what we got Media Days out of. If we're going to break down the top three teams that you see coming into the season from last year, because last year in the Atlantic, of course, it was Clemson, Louisville, and Florida State, all the weight of the conference in one division because, yeah, Virginia Tech did end up winning the Coastal, but then Miami and North Carolina, you know, and as 1-2-3. Do you see it kind of playing out the same way in the Coastal this year?
I got this, Tim. I've got the same exact ACC championship pick for the preseason that was actually played in 2016. So, yes, I do think it's going to be very similar to last year.
year. I like the Tigers to win the Atlantic, and it has more to do with the way Dabo's been able to get the most out of his guys the last couple of years. They're ready to play. They've been on every single stage that you can ask for, and now they're starting to get some of those heavy hitting recruits. But I also like Florida State, and I know that's who my brother, my producer, my co-host picked to win the Atlantic. And, you know, they're a popular pick, too. They bring back DeAndre Francois, Derwin James. Those are the two Noles that represented Florida State down at the ACC kickoff. And I think those guys are poised for a big year. So if you're looking at the top three teams, I think it's going to stay the same. I think it's going to be Clemson, Florida State over Louisville this year. But Louisville's going to not be far behind. Of course, they bring back Heisman Trophy winner Lamar Jackson. But, man, Virginia Tech was my pick to win the Coastal because the bit the last couple of years has been Coastal chaos, right? It's been really tough to pick who's going to win the Coastal. But I think Tech's going to get it done on the back of their defense. So if you look at the top three teams, Clemson, Florida State, Louisville, but I think it's going to be a Clemson-Virginia Tech rematch in the ACC championship game.
Do you think Miami has any chance with Mark Richt there? Because Mark Richt puts together good teams, but as we saw with Georgia, can never get over the hump. Does he finally ever get over the hump in Miami?
Well, the problem with the Canes is they've never played for an ACC championship since they got into the league. And there's, of course, high expectations down there, and they've been pretty much underachieving for a long time at this point. So do I think they have a chance? Yes, absolutely. I look at the Virginia Tech game, actually, as maybe the de facto Coastal championship. And it's in Miami this year, so that could be a big difference. The last time Virginia Tech went down to Miami, they came out losers. So that could be a big game for both teams where the winner you could see in the ACC championship game. And then I know you mentioned North Carolina as well. They lose Mitch Trubisky. I don't think the Heels are going to be in the hunt for the ACC Coastal again this year. I think I actually had them finishing fifth or something like that. But Miami could surprise some people. The thing is, everyone is always talking about how the U is back, right? And it never seems to come to fruition. But I'll tell you what, we talked to Shaq Quarterman today, their inside linebacker, who's a true sophomore. And he was a great interview and whatnot, but I think he's poised for a breakout season. They've got a lot of talent down there, and it's just only a matter of time, I think, until that Miami breaks through.
I mean, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I think even though they're going to be very inexperienced at quarterback, I think getting Kaya off the team is going to make them better because I think Kaya was holding them back, especially offensively. Obviously, he wasn't doing much defensively for him because he doesn't play defense. But I think Kaya was holding them back as far as forward momentum for the team.
It's interesting because Kaya is one of the guys that was drafted. He's going to go play in the National Football League, right? And you know, I had the chance to watch him play live at Lane Stadium this year on a Thursday night when they came to town to play Virginia Tech. And I tell you what, the Hokies dialed up the pressure on him and made him look silly. But they made the whole Miami team look silly that night. They came in and punched him right in the mouth from the get-go. They were hitting hard. I remember Vinny Mahota, their Tech defensive end, played with a separated shoulder. They had a different type of mentality that game. But you saw in that game, Brad Kaya, when he's pressured and you can get to him, he's not very good under pressure. So I do agree with you to some point, but I do think he's also got the ability to make some throws that a lot of those other guys do not have the ability to make.
Okay. Now, Florida State starts off tough right off the bat against Alabama. Can Francois handle the pressure that the Crimson Tide's going to put on him?
He absolutely can, and here's why. Because Francois showed that he can deal with SEC competition in week one last year when they came back and they beat Ole Miss. And he was impressive that game. I think every team they played that was ranked last year, Francois ended up having a completion percentage just at or under 50%. A little bit concerning, but you look at the talent around him, and I think he's going to be able to take a step forward. He's a year older, so I think he's absolutely going to be able to handle the pressure. But darn it, that is a tough way to open the season against Nick Saban's Alabama Crimson Tide. I'm definitely going to take Bama to win that game, but yeah, they're calling it the GOAT. We talked to the CEO, Tim, and president of the Chick-fil-A kickoff game, Gary Stokin, yesterday, and he was calling it the GOAT, the greatest opener of all time, because it's the two highest-ranked teams to meet in week one ever. So I think we're going to see a
great game, but if I had to pick, I'm going to take the Tide. But I think Prince will come ready to play.
Okay, now, surprise teams in the ACC. Do we see a Georgia Tech, you know, rise up and give a challenge in the Coastal? I really don't see anybody other than the top three as far in the Atlantic, because I don't – Wake Forest could scare somebody sometime, but I don't really see BC or the Cuse doing anything. So the surprise team would have to come from the Coastal. If there was a surprise team, who would it be?
Yeah, I think actually the first team you mentioned there, Georgia Tech, is a good surprise team, because they return much of their offense too, and Paul Johnson's going to have that triple option ready to go as he always does. I tell you what, though, another time I had the chance to watch a team play in Lane Stadium last year was when Georgia Tech came in and punched Virginia Tech right in the mouth and ended up winning that game. So they bring back a lot of talent being able to run the ball, and I think, you know, if Georgia Tech can get some momentum going early in the season, yeah, they definitely could end up winning the ACC Coastal. And you know what? That's another game that Virginia Tech is going to have to go play on the road, making it a little bit tougher to get back to the Coastal if you're the Hokies.
Okay, now, I know this is kind of a silly question since the defending Heisman Trophy winner is in the conference, but are there really any Heisman contenders other than Lamar Jackson in the ACC this year?
Well, I've got to be the second guy. I know a good friend of mine actually voted Francois as his preseason player of the year, and I took Jackson. I think Jackson's going to have the best numbers, and I don't really see it any other way. But Francois is a guy that if they find a way to upset Alabama in week one, and then they just ride that momentum through the season, I think he'll absolutely be in that Heisman race. But it would just be between Francois and Lamar Jackson. I don't really see anyone like a Mark Walton for Miami breaking out, or a Nyquan Murray for Florida State. He's a really good player too. But it's the guys who are going to be getting them the ball, Francois and Jackson. I think those are your two top contenders.
Well, Danny Noakes, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. You're welcome back into the classroom here on the University of Fish anytime that you want. We'll be checking in with you throughout the season to see how the Hokies are doing, because I know you, during the season, you focus a bit more on the Hokies rather than the whole conference, and I don't blame you. I'm a Sooner man, and I watch my Sooners each and every week. But Danny Noakes from Super Sports 101.7 in Blacksburg, Virginia, thanks for joining us in the university today.
Appreciate it, Tim. Call me anytime, man. Happy to talk a little Virginia Tech ACC football with you.
Once again, Danny Noakes, want to thank him for coming on the University of Fish this morning, and I guarantee we will be talking to him throughout the season, because the ACC is going to be one of the most competitive conferences in the country, especially with Florida State and Clemson at the top. We'll have to see who can win that other division. Will it be Virginia Tech? Will it be Miami? Will North Carolina find another lightning in a bottle like they did with Mitch Trubisky last year, and see if they can get into the thick of the competition in that division of the ACC? That's going to wrap up the University of Fish for this week. But next week, conference media days have just started. Next week, the Big 12. We're going to do that, see if we can get another coach interview for you from here in the state of Colorado. And as always, a Heisman flashback in your calls right here on the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher. Up next on Extra Sports 1300, the other football show with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden right here on Extra Sports 1300.